Ruin My Childhood.
All right. Thank you for listening to Ruin My Childhood, the podcast where we decide if some things are better off left in the past. As always, I am Mike.
And I'm Kat.
How are you doing tonight, Kat?
Yeah, you know, indifferent.
Ah, good. Good.
How about you?
I'm doing fine, I suppose. Indifferent.
Kind of numb to the world.
Numb to the world.
Hey, at least most Americans now know where Guam is.
That's true.
There's an upside to all this.
There is an upside to the impending nuclear apocalypse. My fantasy of living in a Mad Max world might come true.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to do that at all. Mad Max is terrifying.
Master Blaster.
Thunderdome. Anyway, but we're not here to talk about Mad Max or the apocalypse. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a Jim Carrey masterpiece, The Mask.
Woo!
What do you remember about The Mask?
Almost nothing. I basically remember the trailer.
Oh, I don't remember the trailer at all.
I just remember that this weird guy who apparently needs a lot of attention because his mother didn't love him very much, finds this weird mask and he puts it on and becomes a cartoon character pretty much.
That's not even remotely what it is. he doesn't actually crave attention at all. Like Stanley Ipkiss, I remember I haven't seen the movie in a long time, but I remember loving the movie as a kid, and we didn't own it, but every time it came on, I was excited. I would sit down and watch it no matter what point in the movie it was. I loved this movie as a kid, but it's Stanley Ipkiss is like this just kind of a loser, too nice of a guy. They keep saying nice guys finish last is like the theme of the movie. And he, yeah, somehow finds this mask that's made by Loki, the god of mischief.
Mm.
And the mask basically takes your true inner self and puts it out in the world, and like it gives you like physics breaking powers. And this is, I think, one of Cameron Diaz's first roles. And she like blows up after this movie. And basically, in a nutshell, they're trying to figure out who this bank robber is because they see that it's the mask. But then there's also like this crime boss that's, I don't know what's going on with the crime boss, but there's a crime boss that is dating Cameron Diaz's character. And the mask is infatuated with her, so he tries to get her out of the situation somehow, and just hilarious antics ensue.
I do not remember Cameron Diaz being in this at all.
Yeah, Cameron Diaz is the love interest, or the female lead, yeah.
Oh.
And she looks pretty different compared to like what she looks like later on.
She had
like
her baby fat on her face for quite a while.
Yeah, she still had I think she looked a lot better with a little bit of that on her face.
Yeah.
Like going back and watching old movies, but she's in it. He's got a dog named Milo, I think. And I remember at some point the dog gets the mask and the bad guy gets the mask at some point and he looks like scary. And I remember there's like a large musical number in the middle of the movie with the police.
Nice.
Not the band Sting and the Police, like the police department in that movie.
So we're clearly going into this with a lot of information.
Yeah, I remember this. I haven't seen this movie in easily 10, 15 years, but I love this movie.
I think I watched this movie once about 15 years ago.
I remember some of the one-liners, but I'm going to save them so I can say them to you while we watch the movie.
Oh, thank you.
That's something to look forward to. So what are your expectations going into it? Like, do you think you're going to like it?
No, not at all. I think
you will.
I don't think I will.
Like Jim Carrey a lot more than you think you do.
I like Jim Carrey. I just don't know that I like the Mask era Jim Carrey.
Yeah, that's true. Like, his early movies were a lot more like obnoxious. Like, I know you really, really like Yes Man. We love The Truman Show. We liked Fun with Dick and Jane, although we haven't watched that in a long time, the bank robbery movie.
Right.
But I think you're going to like it. I think it's interesting. And the special effects were like groundbreaking at the time. Although this version of The Mask is nothing like The Mask in the comic. Like, it's based off a comic book and it's based off a really, really dark comic book. Like, The Mask character is super violent and like really kind of grim. And this character is not like that at all. And then it made a cartoon. There was a cartoon based off this version, like the Jim Carrey version of the movie.
Fascinating. So, all right.
Yep, it's a big deal. Let's go watch
this nonsense.
Yay.
Yay.
Smoking.
That's a spicy meatball.
Boom.
Somebody stop me!
You love me! You really love me!
It's party time! P-A-R-T. Why? Because I gotta!
Hey, the medicine from Cuban Beat. And that's it. Chick-chicky-boom, chick-chicky-boom, chick-chicky-boom.
All right, so we just watched The Mask. What did you think, Katrina?
First impression was that it was riding on the successful coattails of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I disagree with that. Roger Rabbit came almost 10 years prior to this movie. I think it was more just coasting on the wild antics of like Ace Ventura and the Cable Guy.
I think this was definitely more in vain with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, just stylistically, the colors, the animation. I think it very much looked like that movie. And I didn't research to see if any of the same parties were involved, but I would not be surprised if they were.
I mean, I guess I get what you're saying, but I think that might just be because Stanley Ipkiss is really into the cartoons, and the whole point of The Mask is he kind of draws out the extremes of your personality and takes away your inhibitions. So I don't know, like, because he was definitely cartoony,
right? It was weird to, like, now that we've seen so much from Jim Carrey and he has evolved so much as an artist and we've seen like a little bit of everything that he has to offer, it's weird to go back to seeing his overacting and having it not always necessarily work.
Yeah, I agree, because he's actually a really, really good actor. Like, a lot of comedians do very, very well dramatically because, you know, they have their inner demons and stuff, so it's actually easy for them to pull.
Because comedians are the most unhappy people on the planet.
Like, I don't think we see Jim Carrey as a good actor until The Truman Show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely moments in this movie that I really liked, but I agree, at the beginning I was like, oh, this is very much the cheesy 90s over the top.
Definitely.
You know, like you said, over it's all scenery chewing.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. Do you want to give a quick summary?
Yeah, so basically in a nutshell, this movie takes place in a fictional city called Edge City. And it starts off with, you see like a scuba diver and he's underwater and he finds this like chest and something breaks, like a pipe breaks and falls on him, which also causes the chest to open, and you see this wooden mask float to the surface. So right off the bat, somebody dies in this movie, in the opening part of this movie. And nobody, it doesn't come up later in the movie at all. But basically the main plot of this movie is, you got Stanley Ipkiss, played by Jim Carrey, is, as he puts it himself, the nice guy. At several points in the movie, they say nice guys finish last.
But he's actually sort of a nice guy. He's not like the internet nice guy.
No, he is a nice guy in the fact that I feel like he's more spineless than nice. But basically, he works at a bank and, you know, his life's not going well. He's, you know, there's this girl that he's got a crush on and he buys her concert tickets. And she's like, oh, you know, my friend's in town. And he's like, oh, yeah, you can keep the tickets. Go out with your friend. He also is getting kind of kicked in the teeth by his mechanic. He just keeps taking more money from him and delaying his car getting back. So his car breaks down on the bridge and he looks over the bridge and he sees what looks like there's a drowning man. So he goes down there to try to save this drowning man, but it's just a mask. So he goes home, puts on the mask, and that first time he kind of like seeks revenge on...
Wait. What happens when he puts on the mask?
Well, let me tell you what happens. So he basically, what happens is he becomes... They have Ben Stein later on in the movie kind of explains what actually happens. But he says in kind of some thing that's unrelated but related, saying that all people wear a mask that, you know, inhibit your id and your superego and everything. He goes into all these like Freudian things and basically says we all are different than how we present ourselves in society. So what this mask does is it takes away those inhibitions and gives you super strength, super powers, reality bending powers, super intelligence. And so when Jim Carrey as Stanley Ipkiss puts on the mask, he becomes this super romantic, suave superhero type guy who's also got this weird slapsticky kind of humor in the style of, you know, the Looney Tunes and cartoons like that, you know, the old. So that's his version of the mask is that. So that first time he puts on the mask, he gets revenge. He goes to bed and he thinks it's all a dream, and the cops come and they start questioning him. He also meets this woman played by Cameron Diaz, who is scoping out the bank because she is the girlfriend of a gangster. And so they kind of have some chemistry and they kind of hit it off. So he puts on the mask again to try to impress her, and he goes and goes to the club. There's a musical number and he kind of makes the gang members really upset in a really stupid thing. Like, these are like the worst criminals ever, because they see him and they just start shooting up the club while there's still patrons in the club.
Right.
And it's like, how do you have a cover if you're just having all your goons out there shooting? So some of the fabric gets shot off the mask suit, and it turns back into Stanley Ipkiss's pajamas, because he's known for having terrible pajamas. So the cop is on to him almost immediately.
I have a note on that for later.
Okay. We'll get back to it. I'll ask you about it after the summary. So basically what ends up happening is he gets out of jail. The bad guy has the mask, and then he has to go take off. He has to go take on the guy and save the day. And that's basically it.
Basically it. So. All right. Let's talk about this character, Stanley.
Stanley Ipkiss.
He doesn't really make much sense. He's steadily employed. He's got, like, a good position within the bank. Like, he's not slumming it, yet he rents a room in this apartment building with a really annoying super, and he doesn't have money throughout the movie.
Correct.
I don't understand why.
They kind of have a couple throwaway lines from the news reporter saying that the city is, like, super expensive because, you know, it's... there's a lot of crime and a lot of pollution, so the places that are nice are super, super expensive. And also, I think Stanley,
which is weird, because Edge City kind of looks like Milwaukee and Jersey combined. It's not pretty.
No, it's not at all. And they have a methane problem. Like, huge parts of the cities have just pockets of methane. So I think part of it is he's just spineless.
Right.
And just doesn't want to ask for promotions or anything like that. Doesn't want to, you know, make waves or anything.
But the character has these moments, like, before the mask thing happens. The character, in his interactions with other people, for the most part, he's super shy, super reserved, super uncomfortable. Yet he randomly has these moments where he throws out these, like, bits of super physical comedy that are so quintessentially Jim Carrey that just don't make sense with the character. That would make sense alone in his room, like, with his dog, but he does it, like, out in public, and it just...
Like what?
He just does weird stuff. It's mostly towards the beginning of the movie.
I don't recall anything like that. The only time I remember physical comedy before him being the mask was when he kicks the loaner car that he has, and it just falls apart.
He does, like, the Jim Carrey weird speech pattern with the big mouth. You know, that kind of stuff.
I guess I didn't notice because it was just Jim Carrey being Jim Carrey.
Funny, the opening credits say introducing Cameron Diaz. That's how old this movie is.
Yeah, this is her first major role.
Pretty crazy.
In the closing credits, she was like, they had cast and then supporting cast. And she was the very last person on cast, which was like 15 people.
Crazy.
Yeah, she was a nobody back then.
A nobody. They also had a discount Nathan Lane playing his friend. His lecherous friend.
Yeah, I can see why you say he's kind of like him. But, you know, just going into the movie, like, what did you think about the humor and everything like that?
I thought this was a kids' movie, or at least a family movie.
No, I remember it's one of those movies, like... We've got Austin Powers on our list, and that movie that we want to cover eventually. Like, there are certain, even Men in Black technically wasn't a kids movie or a family movie. It's just one of those movies that kind of was not so violent that it can be watched by kids. Like, I remember watching this as a kid. Like, there's definitely some darkness to this movie, but there's not, like, blood or anything like that. Like, there's some violence, but it's not over the top, gory, or gratuitous.
It's a little pervy, but watching it, it's very clear that it's not really a kids movie, but it also doesn't really have enough in the script for it to necessarily be something I would ever want to watch again
as an adult. I agree. Right. So initially when we did the beginning part of this episode, I was kind of like, I was excited to watch this. I remember liking it, but we recorded that intro. So the way we do this podcast, a little, you know, behind the scenes, a little bit of how the sausage is made. When we record,
can we not like compare this to shoving animal organs into a synthetic casing?
No, that's exactly what it is. So when we record, so tonight we're recording The Mask, the second part after we watch the movie. We're going to record the intro to our next week's episode right after we finish recording this. So we recorded the intro, I want to say, what, two and a half weeks ago?
Yeah.
And I was really excited. But during that time, because I was actively thinking about the movie, even though we hadn't watched it yet, I started remembering things, and I actually remember almost this entire plot. The only thing that I didn't remember was the redheaded reporter. I didn't remember her at all. But everything else, almost beat for beat, I remembered. Right, pretty much right when the movie started and we first got that bit of Jim Carrey just doing that overacting, I was kind of like, oh,
right,
yeah, I don't know if this is going to be that great.
He had some lines in this movie that were almost iconic. Like, there are lines that you could still say in the voice and people would know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, no, there's definitely moments in this movie. Like, I could tell you were, like, not super into this movie, but you were still laughing.
There were some parts that were very entertaining. I don't think I would ever watch it again. But, yeah, it had its funny bits. I think it was just too much of the quintessential Jim Carrey for it to be a movie that lands well.
You like Jim Carrey from the last, like, 10, 15 years. Like, I know you really, really like Yes Man.
Yeah.
And movies like that, that are a little bit more tame. Like, he has his weird moments.
Like, I like his more complex characters, where you see, like, a little bit of his brokenness.
Yeah, like, even Bruce Almighty.
Yeah.
It's still got that quintessential Jim Carrey, but there is some layers to that, and he's got to be humbled in that movie, and, you know, he evolves as a character. I get what you're saying.
Right.
But this one, you know, basically as soon as they did that overacting, there was a couple things where they looked like right into the camera. And just kind of there's a lot of cliches in this movie. Like, there's a part where he has having a dream about Cameron Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like, licking his ear and kissing him, and then it, like, zooms out, and it's the dog.
Right.
Like, that's one of the most overplayed tropes out there.
I just thought the character himself was a loser. Like, I couldn't really care that much about Stanley. Like, I wasn't sure if he was mentally ill, because he seemed mentally ill. He goes home, he watches cartoons, yet he doesn't connect with other cartoon enthusiasts. He's just kind of a loser.
Well, this is pre-internet days, so I wouldn't say it's fair to say he's not connecting to
people.
I mean,
people were still going to conventions, and this was not pre-internet. There was internet. People were building forums.
Not for, like, everybody. Yeah, but look at that apartment he has. He doesn't have a ton of money. I think I get what you're saying. Like, I think it would have done a lot more for the movie if, like, his boss comes in for one scene when he's late. And he was late because the cops were, like, interrogating him. Like, he should have just been, I'm sorry, there was a break-in in the house.
But there was, like, no development of his relationship with
exactly.
His boss except for that scene.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
it was almost like when you see movies from the perspective of a child and the adults are sort of these caricatures. And
yeah.
In real life, you understand where they're coming from, but they're also comically playing up the child's perspective. And it seemed like a lot of these relationships that he had with other people were presented like that.
I agree.
Which makes me feel like he's mentally ill.
I didn't see him as mentally ill. I just saw him as sad and pathetic. And I would have really wished he would have had almost like in Yes Man, where how he wants to get promoted and he wants to do these things, but he's too shy to do it. And, like, you can see these moments where he wants more, and then he just kind of, like, backs off at the first obstacle.
But
you didn't really see that, which I get what you're saying.
Why is the girl attracted to him at all?
That doesn't make any sense. There's no reason to it, because he wasn't charming with her. Like, he puts a pen.
And I could understand how at the beginning maybe she was flirting with him to distract him. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
But then why does she care at all? Why does she not think it's super weird when he shows up at her gig?
Well, that's not, that was coincidence. But no, I agree. It doesn't make any sense. Like, he's super awkward. He's sharpening a pen and an electric pencil sharpener. And then he goes on and he's like, she, like, comments on his tie. And once again, that's part of the ploy to, you know, keep him distracted. And he starts going on this rant about how it's a power tie. And
okay, blah, so that blah, power blah, blah. Tie, it kind of looks like a white Jackson Pollock.
Yeah.
Later on, towards the end of the movie, the character, the mask, is wearing his yellow suit. And correct. He's wearing that tie.
Correct.
Except that tie gets caught, or it gets shot off. The tip of the tie gets shot off. Yeah. And when it falls to the floor, it turns into a piece of his pajamas. So that doesn't make any sense, because his tie exists in real life where his pajamas exist. But
yeah, but I don't know if it's the same exact tie. It was just a similar. No, I get what you're saying. Like, visually, it was the same tie, but he wasn't wearing that tie when he turned into the mask.
It just didn't make sense that. Yeah, I know he was wearing the pajamas when he turned into the mask. But like, why did the mask have his real life tie?
Because maybe the mask liked that tie. Maybe he really did like that tie because Cameron Diaz mentioned the tie and complimented the tie.
This entire movie just feels like a manifestation of this guy's mental illness.
I don't think he's mentally ill. I think you're latching onto that for some reason. I disagree. I think you're right that they didn't develop the character enough. Like, they could have given him a little bit more Stanley Ipkiss time.
Right.
I agree. But I don't think he was mentally ill. I just think that was probably something. They could have added a couple more scenes with confrontations where, because there is a part when he's with the building manager where she's just being mean to him for basically no reason.
Right.
And
you know what I did like about this world, though?
I wasn't done. I was almost done.
Oh, my God.
So basically she was going to, he had like a retort. But he doesn't say it until she closes the door, and then he says the retort. Like, if you had a few more examples of those, I think you would have had a better character.
Right, him wanting to establish himself and stand up for himself and everything like that. Yeah.
One thing I really
like about this movie was, like I said, it looks visually a lot like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And I like that it has all those visual elements in the cartoony style, and it does have animation, but it's not cartoon animation.
Yeah, it's like early CG stuff,
and
it looked really good.
The CG looks really good. Like, I think the CG still holds up, because even the real things, even the live action things in this movie are so saturated in color. And they found, like, really fun, interesting shapes. And everything's just, like, a little bit more over the top. And so the style of the CG and the animations of, like, when he's transforming into the mask and spinning around, like, the Tasmanian devil cartoon, like, it all just blends seamlessly. It still holds up if you're looking at the overall visual style of the film.
I agree. I thought it worked. Like, it's definitely, if you were to put the CG that they had in like a different movie, would have looked terrible. But because the mask character was trying to portray it as like the cartoons he's really into, it totally worked for this.
Right.
I thought it looked, I actually really liked the special effects in this movie.
Yeah. I just think overall it was obnoxious. And you know, I don't miss having to share time with humans that mimic this version of Jim Carrey. Because my childhood was filled with a lot of like really obnoxious little boys who did not get enough attention and would full on like do Jim Carrey bits.
Out the butt like Ace Ventura.
I do not miss that. This whole movie is just like obnoxious. Like the roadkill joke, super obnoxious. It was just like a flashback to every annoying boy that I ever wanted to beat the snot out of as a child.
I agree. Like, there was some good stuff. Like, there's iconic moments like, smoking.
Yeah.
Somebody stop me and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were some good one-liners and there was some good visual, like that music number you seemed to like. You were cracking up when he was playing like the mariachi kind of guy.
It was just so bizarre. But I mean, like, so much of this movie is really over the top. Like, when he gets cornered by that street gang, there are like 11 of them. This dude is like walking around with this weird face in a zoot suit. Like, what do they think they're going to get from him that is a good investment of that many people's time?
Well, a lot of times those people are just looking for the power and the thrill of messing with somebody. But I agree.
Cartoon universe
streakings. I agree. This, yeah. like there's some fun moments to this movie. I agree, but I think you're right. You said it pretty early on. It's one of those things where it was kind of worth going back to once.
Yeah.
But I don't really feel the need to watch this again.
I feel more confused than anything. Like, why was everyone so into that club? Like, you see inside the club. I mean, it's okay. It's not that great. It's not even the kind of place where you'd necessarily, like, expect a cover, necessarily. It's just,
well,
like...
Well, this is the 90s. Like, this is, you know, Night at the Roxbury. Like, this was when clubs were really getting big again.
I guess because there was nothing else to do. They didn't really have that much internet access.
Yeah.
They didn't have Netflix.
No, they didn't. Oof. No, this was in that time frame when you'd always hear, like... You know, Hathaway, you know, What Is Love and stuff like that. Like those big club musics and dance songs that were super popular. And, you know, where do you go, 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 my love? You know, like those big dance club songs that came out was during this time.
Yeah.
So I guess that kind of makes sense. It's just these criminals. The other thing problem I had was these were the worst criminals.
Yeah.
In the movie. And they were the best. Even the villain didn't have very much. And you don't really need an arc for a villain, but you didn't really get their motivations. Like,
right.
He's just a bad guy, and he's not even a good bad guy. And he looks like a knockoff of Peter Weller's RoboCop actor.
He does. Oh, Freddy from House of Cards was in this.
He is.
And there's
and
a
dies.
Scene. Yeah, when he's dying, his buddy comes up to him, and he gives him a freaking cigarette. Like, I know you're dying and all, but like, yeah, here, have some smoke. So, what? That didn't make any sense.
He wanted to go out doing what he loved.
Can you even really take a drag off of a cigarette when you're dying?
Yes.
Ugh. So weird. And then, like, the detectives who are trying to track him down, like, Little Miss Thang, is basically getting attacked by the mask character in the park, and they're just watching from the bushes.
Yeah,
what
right?
is wrong with these people?
I don't know.
I mean, I did wonder for a while why the reporter was so into him as well, but then you find out later on, she's crooked.
Well, I think she was initially into him, but then they offered that reward. Because they explain that she used to be like one of those, like, not, I don't care.
But
think,
you don't get,
Amy
okay,
or,
yeah, she has an advice column. And I guess he wrote in talking about being a nice guy, which, like, these days on the internet is such a red flag. But I guess, yeah. Like, back then, that was a good thing. But you don't hear any of the substance of this letter that he wrote or any of his sentiments other than nice guys finish last and, oh, I'm so sad. That's basically all you hear from it. Like, I just wish there was more to him. There was a lot of entertaining stuff. There was a lot of weird stuff, like when he's doing the balloon animals and he pulls a condom out. So gross. Good old
yeah.
Ad-lib.
Or when he's in that music scene when they finally are like right before they do that big musical number with the cops and they're like searching him.
Right.
They're pulling out like rubber chickens and the handkerchiefs and like all the normal like stupid stuff and like magic stuff. And then there's like a bazooka, and then he pulls out a wife, a picture of the wife, right. of the detective in lingerie and everything like that. You know, it's a lot of like stupid throwaway gags. And like, I laughed throughout this movie, but I think it was more just from the nostalgia than really thinking it was funny. Like, I actually thought the music, I always thought, even as a kid, I always thought that musical number was kind of dumb. Like, it didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the cops start singing, I'm like, that's kind of messing with their free will. That's not cool. but then you started laughing, and I like your laugh, so I started laughing. I think this is one of those movies.
I like the hip shimmy bits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, when he goes boom, shimmy, shimmy, boom, and then everybody kind of, like, moves their hips around.
I did enjoy that. I mean, there were parts that were enjoyable. I don't think I would ever watch this movie again.
Me neither.
But it did totally change what I remember from my childhood. I did really appreciate that the dog saves the day ultimately, and that
you know
we got that epic close up of the dog like flying through the air and catching the mask, and then
that
ended with a freeze frame because, you know, like quintessential 90s movies, all the best ones ended with a good freeze frame.
Yeah.
So that's my summary. Didn't necessarily ruin my childhood, but it did change what I remembered of this movie quite a bit. I thought it was a kid's movie. It's not really a kid's movie. But it's not really my version of a worthwhile adults movie either.
Yeah, pretty much same thing for me. I knew it wasn't a super kids movie going into it. I remember liking it as a kid. And I can see for, like, you know, a 6 or 7 year old boy, this could be hilarious. But I don't think it holds up as an adult. I think you hit it on the head. Like, I don't think we will come back to this one.
R.I.P. The Mask.
Katrina, what are we watching Michael. For our next episode?
Next episode, we're watching Free Willy.
I can't do the Michael Jackson song from that. cool. I remember loving that movie as a kid.
Who's in this movie?
I don't think anybody big is in it.
Is that Shamu?
I don't know. We'll talk about that when we actually record the next episode.
All right.
All right, Katrina. Where can our listeners follow you?
I am all over the internet at Katrinaocity. So check me out on YouTube because that's where the bulk of my content is.
Awesome. And you guys can follow everything that is MDX Pods at mdxpods.com. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at MDX Pods. We do a lot of little like movie updates on those feeds. And we're also on Facebook, and you can check our you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/mdxpods if you want to help us out. And the other thing we've got going on is Audible. If you want to support MDX Pods, you can go to audible.com/mdxpods, get a free 30-day trial.
Woo.
And a free audiobook, and it's pretty cool. I've been listening to it, and it's awesome. So if you want to get something free and help us out, you know, support the podcast, go to audibletrial.com/mdxpods.
Yeah, buddy.
But that's it. Thank you for listening.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.